Hello and welcome to Pixelated Realms Gamescast, your guide through the digital landscape, untangling the mysteries of your favorite titles and discussing the latest and greatest in video game fun. I'm your host, Alex Salerno, and alongside me is my brother, Tyler, and my good friend, Dustin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back.
How is it going? We are freshly back from GDC, sorry if I'm a little bit quieter than normal. We're doing a late night recording session and my daughter is sleeping, so I'm trying not to be too loud, but we're fresh back from GDC, and like any good conference, I got sick immediately afterwards, and so I've been dying all the last like 2 or 3 days. Been awful, but we're good now, and hopefully we stay that way. But we've got a lot of fun stories, and we'll talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about, I think, Dragon's Dogma 2. I don't know why that like stunned me for a minute, but that, and then maybe some Overwatch 2 gossip as well. So let's go ahead and dive right in, I think, unless you guys got anything to go with.
No. So how was GDC, guys? So I was not able to attend, unfortunately, due to work, but tell me about it. I'd love to hear it.
It was cool. So, you know, Dustin's industry, you know, veteran, so I think he's been to either this or things like this, and so I don't think he was as impressed, but it was very eye-opening for me as someone who's never been and is not really part of the industry. And one of the things that I found just absolutely amazing is, one, I felt like it was like my people, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I was there and I was like, these are my people, all the fucking weirdos who are just super passionate about video games and just want to know everything they can about them and just doing, you know, trying to make video games. And you kind of have like, there's kind of a division of like, there's the indie side and there's kind of the AAA side. And the indie people are like literally just driven on passion. And then the AAA people are just pushing the technical like capabilities of their company. And it's just like absolutely amazing. So it was really cool to just kind of be there and like feel the vibe and the passion and be like, you know what? Like when I'm at work and I like don't give a shit about what I'm working on. Like I like my job, don't get me wrong. And I have no intention of leaving. But it's like, it's different than, you know, you're like, hey, why are you really passionate about what you do at work? You're like, well, they pay me. And yeah. As opposed to there, you can tell that people are there because they want to be. And it was very cool. I don't know, Dustin, so, what do you think? Oh, go for it.
I was going to say, so it sounds like maybe like the indie developers are more like intimate booths that you could walk up to and interact with. And right, then I'm sure like the PlayStation and those people have big, big old sections.
So I think the difference between the AAA to the indie, or not necessarily indie, I wouldn't define GDC as like AAA versus indie. I would describe it more as in like industry versus like education, I guess, in a certain way.
Okay.
And I put education as in like the talks that you go to in the summits. Those are like very AAA driven, as in you're hearing from developers from the big studios, right? Like Insomniac and Blizzard and like Sony, Santa Monica, like they're there, they're talking about their game, Spider-Man, you know, whatever it might be. And like that's really educational because you're getting to hear from these people like directly from the mouth. But then when you get to the expo floor, you don't see any like gaming companies in that regard. Like there is no PlayStation, Xbox. And I guess this has actually changed from years past where like the developer or the studios had more of a presence. But from what we saw this year, it gets much more like technical, like dev industry, where you've seen like the big booths were Unreal, Meta, Unity, Discord had one, which was kind of interesting, I think, because they're trying to get people to integrate their tech into their games, more like monetization. And then like from the smaller booths, like those were like the big ones, like Unreal like was also like, the dominant one for sure, or Epic, whatever. And then like, it kind of like spreads out and you see more like it's very salesy, as in like, come and let us show you how you can integrate our product into making your game more like into like helping you in development. So like you saw a lot of like haptics, like mocap software. You saw people pumping Web3, you know. And then I'd say the other kind of thing you saw is you saw a lot of regional booths. So like there was a huge booth dedicated to like Germany, and that was all like indie games from Germany. And then you had one from Italy,
New York, Brazil, Sweden.
you know, so like they were all over the place. And then as you kind of like then migrated towards like the smaller, like I don't know, like the north area of the hall, you started seeing much more like student stuff, and like Digitech was there pumping their program, but then you also saw a lot of student projects, not from Digitech, but other booths. So yeah, it was kind of interesting on the expo floor. Like right when you came down the stairs, you definitely got hit right with the big, big development tools. And then it kind of like trickled from there.
Yeah. I mean, so this is truly a this is a gaming conference for the developers selling to them.
I guess I kind of forgot to mention that. So if you're not familiar with like what GDC is, it's not Comic-Con, it's not E3, it's none of that. This is for like working industry people. So it's like there was kind of two things you could do. So it was Monday to Friday, and at each of those days you could go to like a talk. So you would go and you'd have like they'd have a room set up, and there's a bunch of breakout rooms basically, but there were dozens of rooms, and you go and you'd like say, oh, this is the talk that I'm interested in. Like I, for instance, went to a couple of talks from Insomniac about how they made Spider-Man 2. Very cool. Like it was very cool. It was basically, you know, their developers are just walking through like one little detailed piece of the game and being like, this is how we did this. I went to another one that was like from Remedy about Alan Wake 2 and how they just did how their pipeline for creating missions were, and that was very cool. Like it was very insightful. Whoa. And then I went to another one from like this indie developer that was like why you should make your own engine kind of thing. Like it was like it was all over the place. And it was very cool. And there was, you know, in each time slot, there was probably like 20 different talks you could go to. So it was like you had this like huge, you couldn't go to them all, you know, obviously, unless you had like some time skipping ability. But they, it was very cool. And then on Wednesday, the expo floor opened, which is, you know, like what you'd think of at like E3 or something like that. That kind of opened up. But like Dustin was saying, it wasn't, you know, there to show off like their new game. It was there for like the engineers and the product managers and stuff to go and be like, is this going to make my game better? And, you know, we saw a lot of, I think haptics and AI was the really big stuff. Yeah. We did see some of that like Web3 stuff, but honestly, I hate it. And I think it's just like, I'm not even going to give it more airtime than that. It's the crypto bullshit, NFTs and all that shit. And yeah, we're not doing that. We don't support that. I'm skipping. Hey, no Web3. But we would go and it was cool. It was really cool to see. And you know, Epic had a very big presence there, with their Unreal Engine. Cause you know, they want everyone to use their engine, and, Fortnite was everywhere. Yeah. It was very cool.
Yeah. It was cool too, because they were having like talks right there at the Epic booth, like going over different like ways to use their development tools. So even if you didn't have the Summit badge, which I think was like around $700 or more. Because I only had the expo badge. So the first 2 days, I literally couldn't do shit. I fell asleep on the third floor of the West Hall for like 20 minutes one day. It was pretty nice. you know, but it was cool because there is stuff once the expo hall opens that like you can still get to do that stuff. You know, get to like get more hands-on with the technology.
Yeah. And that's where you get the swag.
Yeah, I got three shirts from the Epic booth. what up, dog?
For our audio listeners, we got an extra guest.
So that's funny because I was although I was not at GDC, I was also in San Francisco attending a meeting in a meeting space, just not the same one you guys were. Well, maybe that's next cool though. Year. The one thing I can contribute, although I wasn't at GDC this year, GDC actually uploads a lot of their talks onto YouTube, and I've watched quite a few of them, and they're just absolutely excellent. Like you said, they're very specific, detailed presentations on, you know, things, but that's like really where you learn the juicy stuff. You know, you're like, why did Spider-Man swinging feel great? Well, there's a 3-hour talk on it, you know, and they'll explain that. And so, you know, this also plays into the world I live every day. So like, you know, conferences, these kind of conferences are something I do know a good amount, but yeah, that sounds really interesting. So like, just out of curiosity, is anyone trying to pitch games to people there, or is that like
constantly,
not really?
100%. Constantly.
Yes.
So like one of the things that I took away as somebody who wasn't, you know, like in this industry all the time is that like, especially the like more indie companies, everyone is trying to pitch something to everybody. So like in between the meetings or after when we would go to like parties and stuff like that, or, you know, kind of networking events, like everyone was like pitching to everyone else. You know, they were like, hey, this is my game. And da, 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 we're looking for funding, or we're looking for somebody to do this, or I'm an investor, I'm looking for a game, and vice versa. That one wasn't as common, but we, there was a few. And so it was like, everyone's trying to like find something. And it's funny. So Dustin is there, you know, like as his PR agency, handing his card out to like everyone who would listen. He's like, hey, you need PR? Here's PR. Yeah,
you got an agency? You got an agency?
I mean, you gotta.
Yeah. And well, that's just like how it was. And that's why, that's what GDC is. It's just a bunch of professionals trying to like co-mingle and try and learn each other's craft and be like, hey, I need this. This, it's like the bazaar of, you know, skills, and people are trying to like, you know, bid for them.
I'm sure behind the scenes, like, even though like Blizzard and like, but I won't use Blizzard as an example, but like publishers, especially like publishers that produce indie games like Rogue or Midwest or different folks, I'm sure that they had biz dev people there just doing meetings with people. Like, indies, like, come bring us your indie, let us see it. Well, you know, if it's interesting, we'll set up like another talk. So, like, they don't have like a floor presence, but if you're a GD, if you go to GDC, you can set up your profile to show like what company you are, what you're there to do. And so, like, as a PR person, like, people aren't really seeking me out for the most part. But like, if you put like investor in your profile, for instance, we know someone that did that, and like, they were just like getting blown up with like people trying to meet with them and set meetings through the GDC app. So I do think that's a really neat thing that GDC does, is they kind of try to help facilitate meetings. So
which
yeah, I'm
app
sure
did they use
just
it's
their
just
own.
Called
they
GDC.
Own, yeah, they have their
it's
own app.
Probably built
it's
on some other framework
by something. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But I mean, they also are game developers, so you know. Maybe
I mean, you could just
skills.
That was like a sponsor. It's just some kind of generic app.
Yeah,
if you're an audio listener, I'm showing you the. Yeah, I mean, it's not a very complicated app. So I'm sure they could have had somebody build that with no problem.
Yeah, my company offers an app like that.
Yeah,
but that was cool because you know, you can. I'm sure if you were, like I said, with a publisher, especially one that's known, like you're just getting blown up like crazy. People trying to set meetings with you. So it's interesting because like Alex said, like people are constantly pitching. But then you're also there to like learn and expand your knowledge base of like what's coming in the industry, what's the newest tech. So super filled with like indie folks. We actually we got to hang out with Liana Ruper, who's Dirty F and Hippie. She's like a community manager at Bungie, but she is also a game informer. She's been all over the place on the journalism side, so she's really great.
That's cool.
We just ran into her out on the lawn, and we ended up hanging out with her like all day Tuesday. I think it was. Was it Tuesday?
Maybe it was Monday. I think so.
I don't know. One of the first couple days, it all blended together. I think it was Monday, actually. You know, but then like as you're sitting there hanging out with her, because she's everybody knows who she is. So many people are just like coming up and saying hi, and you're just like, it's just like a speed dating like networking.
Yeah, I know. I kind of felt bad for her.
Yeah, you know, but it was cool because a lot of like that lawn area behind the North Hall is just like filled with people, and it was a really cool place just to hang out. And like I said, you just don't even realize the people just like walking past you and who they could be. I thought it was cool actually, like going into the halls and stuff. You'd see like speaker, like blah blah blah, Insomniac, you know, and like I was just in the room, like giving a talk. So that's also a cool part about GDC. Like you are talking to like some of the most well-known experts in the space at what they do, but it doesn't feel closed off. Like if you want to, like you can go talk to them after the talk, and like they'll sit there and chat with you and answer your questions, and you'll bump into them in the halls. So yeah, it's a great place to just network and get to know folks. And you know, if you're not shy, a great way to just like ask a ton of questions and gain a lot of knowledge in a few days.
Yeah, people are very open there. It's like very willing to just talk and have a good time because they're interested in you too. They're like, oh, who's this person? Are they somebody I should be, you know, getting to know, and vice versa. And
we sound like 5 feet questions. From Roland Emmerich, the director of Stargate and Independence Day, for a talk. It was an interesting talk. I'm not going to go into it because, you know, but because it's Web3.
Yeah, could have high-fived him. That's like how close we were.
But we did think it was pretty cool being like that close to this guy who created some of the really most cool sci-fi movies ever. So that was cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I haven't been to GDC, but I've been to BlizzCon a few times, and it's really funny how like, yeah, like one, like you're just like walking around, or like we were like waiting in line and they just be like, okay, you know, hey, how are you guys doing today? And I'd be like, good. Like, you know, like what, you know, everyone who works BlizzCon's Blizzard staff. So you'd be like, oh, what do you do? And they'd be like, oh yeah, you know, like I'm the lead character developer of Heroes of the Storm. And we're like, oh, well, I'm gonna try Heroes of the Storm. Like, hey, that was cool, you know? Like, yeah. Tell me about the new character, you know? Like, it was just kind of like, even though we're all video gamers who would stay inside, you know, 20 hours a day and or more, and you know, don't want to leave our nests, like when you force us out there, it can be really fun to you know, make those connections. I remember like walking around and just seeing like Shroud, and I was just like, you have to like sit there and just be like, oh, connecting this person you've seen on the screen to the real person, and you're like, oh yes, connection, oh yeah, that is Shroud, okay,
yeah,
interesting.
It's really interesting to go exactly like you're saying, like it kind of it like humanizes those people, and you're like, yeah, they're just people like we are. And but the internet and everything, just like, you know, you inflate this giant image of everyone, and it's amazing. Like being like, if I try and get into the mindset of what it must be like to be somebody who's like very well known in these like niche communities, because they're probably like, you know, just normal person, and they're not Kim Kardashian with paparazzi following them around everywhere, and they're just like, yeah, but I'm really popular in this little group of people,
and then I make a lot of money.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Well, I mean, it was the same. So one of the BlizzCons, like Amaranth, passed us while she was streaming, and we were just like, and the first thing I thought was like, oh my god, this lady's like 5'2" or something, like she's really short. And then I was like, oh yeah, it's Amaranth. It's just so weird, like it's just so, you're just like, oh yeah, they're a whole human being, like, and they're totally normal,
you someone know? You'd like see online, and then you're like, should I go say hi to them? And you're like, actually I don't really want to. Like
every time I see that argument, I'm like, why would I bother another human being? Like, that's what I think. Like, every time I'm like, I feel like what's the point?
I feel like game developers are normal. I feel like streamers are like fucking crazy.
Clip that, man.
No, because like, I don't know, man. Like, you hear the horror stories of like Twitch cons and like entitlement, I mean, and stuff from so many streamers of like,
well, you,
like, oh, how many followers do you have to get to my party? And like,
it's totally different though. It, like, one is a popularity contest and the other is a group of professionals. Like, you know, it's like a whole different business.
I think that once you've met like the guys that have made it more, like I've seen Pokey, not in person, but I've seen like her walking across like conventions, and it seems like she's really cool. They're like, she'll stop and take pictures, and she's very humble. So maybe like you kind of get to a certain level of like Twitch celebrity where, or like streamer celebrity where you like, you come back down to earth, but like that middle tier of people trying to prove that like, they,
I don't know. I kind of imagine that if we were to meet Ninja on the expo floor, it wouldn't be a great encounter. Like,
I've run into Soda Poppin quite a few times, and I got to say, pretty
interesting.
I don't know.
So, Soda Poppin, I guess, was guy. In my World he's of Warcraft guild like a long time ago, and I didn't realize
it. I also very, very much pissed him off by murdering him in World of Warcraft. Like, and honestly, it wasn't even like, this is okay, this is a video game related story, so I can tell it. Like, this is just the bullshit that I don't like, though. So, were me and my buddies, I think this was Legion, maybe, or maybe it was Battle for Azeroth, either way. We were all about to go do like a mythic dungeon, right? And so we're flying to the mythic dungeon location, which is what you have to do. And, you know, we're right about to enter the mythic dungeon entrance, and we just start getting opened up on by some goddamn druid, Alliance druid. And so, of course, we fight back, and it was like this, the druid, one druid, which is soda popping. And, you know, and we kill him because it was then like 3-1. And then, like, I start getting messages and people are like, invite me to Lair, which is like, invite me to the Lair that has soda popping in it. Because, wow, Lairs, the servers. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? What the fuck is happening? And then I was like,
they saw on stream that you.
And then I was like, oh shit, that was a druid. And people are messaging me like, invite to Lair. Did we just fucking fight soda popping? And so I go to his stream and he's there and he's like, these fucking guys are such like pussies. Like they totally 3v1'd me or something. And I was like, motherfucker, this dude tried to assassinate us. We weren't even like fighting. So like he was like giving us shit and saying we were bad and stuff. And I'm just like, man, I've met you in real life twice. Like you're a bit of a dick, dude.
Yeah, no, he was in our guild before he blew up, like before anyone knew who he was, like before he even streamed, honestly, when he was just a kid. So it was kind of funny. I didn't realize that my buddy who's still wild. He's like, yeah, dude, you know, like soda pop, and like that was this fucking guy from like way back in the day who was in Run with us. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah. Like, that's cool. Kind of weird how you, like, there's so many different personalities you're running into, wow, where like you just don't know who you're playing with. Like we had a really famous music producer named Blood Pop was in our guild. We knew who he, like, we knew because he told us who he was, but he's like Grammy nominated, works with Lady Gaga, and it's like he's just dorking out playing WoW and like sending memes to everyone,
some randos. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's
I like
funny.
To think I've played with Henry Cavill once, but who knows?
Randomly. You never
yeah,
know.
Just randomly. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, GDC sounds cool. Hopefully I'll be able to make it next year.
Yeah, we got the meat sweats, by the way. Shout out to David Lewis for hooking up with the meat sweats. Took us to STK, and we got a 36 ounce tomahawk ribeye in New York, and it was really good, but we almost
bucket
died.
Of fries. Yeah, yeah, it was good.
We almost died afterwards.
Oh, we did almost
I would have
die.
Trained the whole conference for that.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was good.
Wow.
David is an
amazing
host.
Anyway, while you guys were busy at a conference, I was playing video games like this podcast is about.
Are you hitting your mic mount,
yes,
Dustin?
Yes, he is.
Because we can
Stop
hear
doing
the
it.
Spring hit.
I'm not hitting the mic this spring. I'm sticking this magnet toy from my son, like, on the end of it. Not
yeah,
on
we
the
can
spring,
hear every single episode. Time you do it.
All right, I'm sorry. I can't
it's
tell
super
the
loud.
On.
We'll fix it all in post. That is
yeah,
impossible.
Right.
Fuck it. We'll do it live.
We're doing it live.
So, yeah, well, you guys were at GDC. I was playing Dragon Dogma 2, which had a pretty interesting launch, given that it was praised a couple weeks before it was at the pre-launch. It was getting incredibly good reviews. And then Capcom decided to sneak in like a whole bunch of microtransactions right at the last second, which doesn't make any sense in a single player game like this. Yeah. So let's talk about it. Huh?
Yeah. I'm also playing Dragon's Dogma.
Do we think the microtransactions are what triggered people, or do we think the sentiment started changing? Because, you know, Gamergate is still happening and all that. I think GDC, I haven't seen much the last week because of GDC. But there's a lot of heat on Capcom because Asmongold was announced as like a Dragon Dogma 2 like ambassador or something like that. And you've seen a lot of like, I saw a lot of sentiment on social media kind of flip on the game where people are like, I can't fucking believe you, Capcom. So I wonder if like that has played any role in like the backlash.
Why are people just latching on? Asmongold?
Because he's made a video about like anti-wokeness in video games, and like, you know, being like, video games should be anti-woke, which is sure. You know, obviously the opposite side of what people deemed the right side of the argument for Gamergate, which I'm on that side also, but not I'm on the anti-Asmongold side. But you know, so I'm curious if that has played anything into it. Also,
I didn't realize that was such a big component, but you could be right.
That's interesting because I haven't really seen any of that. I saw the microtransaction stuff, but I didn't see that as hurting the quality of the game. I mean, people are pissed about the microtransactions, but people are still like, but the game is pretty good. I mean, it got like pretty high meta score, right? For a while. Or did it get bombed? I don't know. Let's look.
It's a mix, but I'll be honest, like, for the most part, I just don't really care about this whole, like, the reaction stuff. Like, I'm more about, like, the game and the mechanics, and do I personally like it very selfishly.
Yeah, so, same.
Like, as far as the game is concerned, it's, like, first, just like Dragon Dogma 1, there's just something about the way that they do the game that makes it a little unintuitive to me. So, like, it's I'm always pressing, like, the wrong buttons, like, mm-hmm. that I think it should be. But once you get used to it, like, it starts to feel fine and really good at times. I gotta say, I mean, it's, like, a really gorgeous game. I mean, technically, it just looks really, like, well put together. Everything, I should be taking more screenshots as I play. You know, I still find pawns to be a weird idea, and I'm still super confused by them. But super I'm weird. Still kind of enjoying it.
What is the pawn thing?
So the pawns in Dragon's Dogma lore are these, like, ethereal beings that just, like, are there to help you. And you get to make one yourself, but then the other two, either you make them yourself later, or you can adopt them from other players and computer-generated ones.
Yeah, so they're multidimensional beings that can travel between dimensions, and every single Arisen, which is what your main character is special. There's only one in the entire world, or universe, dimension, whatever.
But yeah, I'll explain.
I don't know about that.
I don't want spoilers.
But anyways, you're this creature, this Arisen thing, not creature, and you have a pawn in your universe, which is this human that is dedicated their life to you, basically, to being your slave. But the pawns can travel to other dimensions, so, like, basically other players can take your pawn and add them to their party, and they can, like, get the benefits of your level and experience, because the pawns will also, like, throughout the game be like, hey, I've been here before. Do you want me to help you and show you where the treasure chest is? Because it's like, if I went through the dungeon and I did it, my pawn remembers it. And if Tyler plays with my pawn, then my pawn will show him the way. So it's supposed to be this kind of, like, that idea, I think, is cool. So the vision, I think, is good. The execution of that vision is dog shit. And totally
dog shit. Oh my God.
I think it's dog shit. But I think so. Okay. Let me tell you my opinion on Dragon's Dogma. I like the game. I'm playing it. I'm having a good time. But this is a problem I have with Capcom, is all of Capcom's games have suffered from really awful immersion, which I think is Tyler's first point, was that you said, like, it's like, it doesn't seem intuitive. At first, it's like that. It's because Capcom games don't feel very immersive. They feel like a video game. And, you know, that is fine, like, 10-15 years ago.
Sure.
But nowadays, when gaming has evolved to a much more modern thing, games are supposed to kind of feel seamless. Like, we've learned a lot of lessons, right? When you play God of War, like, you don't think about half the shit you're doing. You're just, you are doing it because it's natural in the game. And, you know, you feel like that with, like, Alan Wake and all these, like, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn or Forbidden West. You know, it doesn't feel like a video game. It feels like you're walking through a story. It feels like you're immersed in this narrative. Dragon's Dogma.
Things like pawns are the opposite of that.
Exactly. It feels like a video game. And there's, like, really sudden breaks in where it'll, like, throw up a tutorial message. And you're just, and it's like, read this message because we didn't have time to teach you in game. Or things like the beginning of Dragon's Dogma is pretty bad. And it's literally, and I'm not going to, this is not spoiling shit for you, but you, well, I won't spoil these certain parts. But you start in an area, you do some stupid mundane task that doesn't actually teach you shit, then it teleports you to another area, and they're like, oh, that was weird. Oh, by the way, you're this, like, super special guy. We should be kind of, like, loving you. And you're like,
yeah, you're actually our prince, you know?
Yeah, the contrast between the beginning of the game and that moment, which is, like, only, like, 5-10 minutes, is so stark and sudden. It's, like, shocking to, you know, you're like, you have to think about it. Like, it doesn't make natural sense. And that's, I feel like that with a lot of Capcom games. And that's where the immersion is broken, right? That you're constantly, like, jarred. You're like, wait a minute, that, why is that happening? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, when Kratos picks up, you know, an axe or some shit and throws it and it snaps back into his hand, you're like, That makes sense in this universe. In this universe, they like set a couple of rules and stuff, but they do so many things that snap you out of it that make you like have to think about it, and like you lose that dissidence, that narrative dissidence.
I agree in the sense that it's like, it feels like they're just like, welcome, main character. You're the main character. You know, welcome to our, these are your teammates. Like, it's so,
it's like rushed.
And it's not rushed. It's an intentional style choice. It's really intentional. No, Dragon's Dogma. And here's the thing is like, I know if I keep playing, I'm going to enjoy it a lot. And I do enjoy it, like, when I'm playing. I love the fact that vocations are your classes, mm-hmm. like your character's class.
And you can change them.
You can change them at will. So, and you get more and more as you go. So like, that's like a really appealing thing. But like, I think this is just one of those games where you have to dig in and you have to immerse yourself, despite you saying that, you know, it's immersion ruining, because it's all about like running around and discovering things. Mm-hmm. Like, just like I was running around and like a giant forest, like ogre or, you know, giant like attacked us. And like, now I'm like grabbing onto this dude, stabbing him in the neck. And it honestly, it didn't really occur to me until this one that Dragon's Dogma is just their like, it's Capcom's Dark Soul. Like, it's like Monster Hunter meets Dark Souls.
It's more like their Dragon meets RPG. Age.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's Capcom's Dragon Age, like, but like with Monster Hunter, like, you know, combat. It's interesting because it's all about like the weapons. So I was like, wow, this is really like Monster Hunter World a lot.
Which just suffers from the same problems I'm talking about.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I mean, like, I'm probably like 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours in. I mean, I like the game. Like, the thing is, despite all of its issues that it has, so like it's immersion breaking, I would say it's really bad dialogue. The dialogue is pretty bad. The
I like
story,
how seamless it is, though.
Yeah, but here's my ups: is technically a great game. The mechanics are really fun. The world is very cool. It's very like going into a cave and searching the cave and finding the treasure is very satisfying. And like, even like, if you're not, it's got that like Skyrim esque where you can kind of get distracted on things, right? Where you're like going to the main mission and you find like a cave, you go into the cave and you find out that, you know, the cave is much deeper than you thought it was. It has that kind of progression, which I really enjoy. And I do like the pawn idea, the vision of the pawns. And the idea of that I can pull a pawn in from someone else's game, and that they'll do that thing where they're like, hey, there's a cave nearby that I've been to. Do you want me to show you? And I'm like, yes. And then we go to the cave.
First time that happened, it was like, what? Like, they were like, hey, like, we need to go this way. And I'm like, why is the pawn telling me where to go? Like, yeah. I thought that was cool. You know, I think this is also one of those games. And because I only had like 10 hours on the first one, maybe I'm wrong, but it just feels like one of those games where hour 10, you're like, okay, like, this is pretty fun. But then hour like 20, you're like, no, I'm starting to feel like this is invested and my character has details mm-hmm. and development. And then like hour 50, you're like, no, I'm never, this is my favorite game ever. You know, it's like one of those games where you just keep getting more and more sucked into it. And
yeah.
And so I'm trying to get there. I know a lot of the people who do love the game, like, kind of did, because they ended up just spiraling into like playing 100 hours, you know.
Yeah And it's definitely like a long game, you could tell, because it's just the scope of it. Like, if you were to, you know, beeline the story, you could I saw somewhere it's like less than 50 hours.
Still, but 50 hours,
I mean, that's still a lot. I think what I saw was like 20 to 50 hours. I'm like, that's a fucking huge gap, but somewhere under 50. But you could easily spend 100 hours in this game just roaming around, because it's open world and there's just so much you can do.
It's not afraid to throw a monster at you that's like 10 levels higher.
Oh,
know?
No.
Like,
it'll stomp your ass into the curb. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll keep playing it and get back to you more. Between switching off between that and Final Fantasy Part 2, you know, so there's a lot of games right now to play.
I have a question for you guys about the microtransaction stuff in Dragon Dogma.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw a really interesting argument about it, actually. So I'd say the more of me would say that I don't care if microtransactions exist for cosmetic only. If people want to spend the money to make their character look different, I don't give a fuck. You know, like, I think it's a cool option for people. But I saw a really interesting argument that counters that, that I actually kind of agree with to a certain extent. And the argument was that, yes, it is cosmetic only, but how do we know that developers weren't like, hey, let's make this piece of armor like a rare drop off this boss, but then like execs were like, no, let's hold that for the battle pass and monetize it. You know, so how much content are we losing that was originally planned to be free or should be free, could be free, as ways to get them through the game that are now being pulled away? And not just in Dragon Dogma 2, but just, sorry, I hit the mic. Not just in this game, but like across the industry, are players losing content that should be free because executives are saying, no, that's one of the better pieces of gear you guys designed. We need to monetize that piece of gear. You know, and I do think we see that a little bit with stuff like Valorant, for instance. I fucking hate that Valorant, the first gun, or the only gun you get for free, is just like this basic grayscale, ugly piece of shit. You know, it doesn't even look like anything. Yeah, but
the purchasable ones are like so high quality in Valorant. Like, they like changed the game on like skin looks.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at Counter-Strike, I'm okay with Counter-Strike base guns because they look like the real guns. An AK-47 looks like an AK-47. So if I want, or an M4. So if I want to put this cool paint decal on my M4, whatever. But if I don't, it's fine because it looks like a real gun. Like, that's just what they look like. But in Valorant, you literally just get like this gray, like emotionless skin that doesn't look like anything. And then, yeah, you can put your own on it.
Pay money to make me look better.
Yeah, you know, it's so blatant that they want you to spend money to make it look interesting that it's kind of a turnoff for me because it's so one-sided. But yeah, so that, to pull it back, that is my question for you guys. What do you guys think about that? Like, the fact that like this person was making this argument that these should have been or could have been or might have planned to be content that was free that now is being pulled out because it's some of the better looking gear.
Yeah, I mean, 100% that's happening. There's no doubt in my mind that's happening. Like,
and it's ruining games too, where I'm sure people are like, yeah, this is a great game. And they're like, great, take all this and monetize it. Like, it, yeah, I feel like that's totally like got to be happening in some degree. Maybe not in the, exact chain of events we just said, but in some yeah, degree.
Because, I mean, unless monetization is built in from the get go, so like a lot of games do have that. For those, I would say probably not. Like, Valorant was designed with monetization in mind. A lot of live services games are built that way. So those, that extra effort was never going to happen anyways. It was part of the normal effort was to build those things. This game for me, however, like Tyler was saying, it's like a single player experience. I didn't even know it had microtransactions until I looked online. Like, it's not even obvious.
This isn't a new thing for Capcom. This is like a running thing Capcom does, and it was in the original Dragon Dogma. It's in other Capcom games, so it's not a new thing. It's just if you were paying attention kind of thing.
Exactly. That's what makes me think that, like, 100% that they were like, they did not make this with monetization in mind, and then somebody came down from the top and said, hey, don't forget about monetization. We need to throw in some of those add-ons, even though it's a $80 game already. I think I remember seeing somewhere that it was like already more than $70, but I don't know. No, I guess if you got the deluxe, it was $70, but I mean, that's still a lot of money. So it's like a $70 game, but we're also then going to nickel and dime you with a couple of bonus skins. And
Destiny was obviously the worst about this.
I've
played Battle Pass, expansions, and Eververse.
You're talking about the number of things? Yeah.
Like, oh, things, you just, they do all
just
of them.
Wait until you pick up Warhammer. You'll see monetization.
$40 piece of plastic.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So, like, in Dragon's Dogma, I don't even know what I can purchase. It gives me the ability to, like, pay real money for currency, but I'd have no idea what that currency does. Like, I haven't noticed what is in this game that's monetized. So, like, Yeah, like am I ever? Do I have to seek it out? Like, I'm not going to, but
it definitely seems like a desperate attempt to make a couple extra bucks, because like there is no reason that, like, like you said, there's no reason. I never feel like I would have to be like, oh, is there a new skin for my character? No, because there's 1,000 pieces of armor, you know, like there's weapons and shit.
Yeah, like, what am I? I heard you could like purchase like fast travels and like things like that, but like, and that's that would
scummy.
Be con- and that's, but yeah, I was about to say, and that would be convenient, which is fucked up. Like, then you're like actually making me pay.
That's like some like, mobile game bullshit right there. Yeah. Oh, you want to make this timer go faster and save your, you know, your lifetime? Pay $5. No, fuck you.
We'll have to talk a little bit more.
Helldivers. Pay to win stuff last week. I feel like we did.
I think we did a little bit.
Okay, what is their pay to win stuff?
I mean, I don't think they're pay to win, but
well, that's the whole argument about
work your way through it.
There's an argument for it, definitely.
Yeah, but it's the argument too. It's like, you know, it's PVE content only, and it's not like guild racing. Either, so it's like, if you want to do it, like, is there really any harm to the other player base? Like, in my opinion, pay to win is like you were getting an advantage over other players in some way, whether it's PvE, PvP, because most people pay to win as competitive, right? Like, you're playing a competitive game. But if you look at like World of Warcraft, even just PvE content, I know for someone, and Tyler, you're in the same bucket, like, it's people who like grinded top raids. It fucking pissed me off if like a rival guild on the server that we were like trying to compete with in terms of first kills all of a sudden went and purchased like some fucking $10 stat boost to get to a raid
faster. Completely, it just voids the entire game. Either that or everyone has to do it. And it's like, then why does it even exist, right? Like, if there's something like, oh, I need to pay $5 to get the 20% stat boost or whatever, then just bake that into the goddamn cost of the game, because everyone's going to need it if it's competitive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I've definitely participated in crap like that before, and it sucks, you know? And it's like, you know, gamers want to, you know, just know our cost up front. Like,
I will say, I think there's an argument to pay to win, or what's deemed pay to win being a good thing. And we actually messaged this. Well, we messaged this with Star Wars Battlefront. Was it Battlefront 2? It might have been a Battlefield game. I don't know. One dice game that came out.
That was quite a few episodes ago.
Yeah, well, we messaged it because
we talked about this.
Did we?
We're talking about Battlefront 2,
like,
you mean?
One of our first, like, 5 episodes.
Okay. Well, just as a refresher really quickly, I won't dive super into it. Like, basically, like, the idea of, are you too busy to be able to grind the person who has a lot more free time, like a group here, like I can't fucking play 20, 30 hours a week and keep up with the person who's getting to level 50 and unlocking the best guns faster because they have way more time to play. So that's the other argument that's actually positive for play to win. It's like, I'm not trying to get ahead. I'm trying to maintain pace. You know, but the problem is obviously the people with a lot of time, they also buy those things.
And money.
Really fucking far ahead.
Yeah.
You know?
You know,
well, it's just complicated though, because it's like that we're now like getting into like the dad gamer like realm, you know what I mean? I mean, maybe you're already there, you know, and like, so the way we consume video games is changing, but like mine and Alex's dad, like literally, like you said, like he might need that battle pass just to keep current, but like a teenager with a lot of free time, you know, like they're just not going to have the money to do that. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's this weird balance.
I'll say what I said last time, and I encourage anybody to try and find that episode that we talked about this before, but it's like, you know, like how WoW does it. If you log off, you get log off XP bonus. And when you come back on, you have, you know, like double rest XP.
We did talk rest about that. I remember this argument.
So yeah. So it's like, there are still ways to do it that don't require monetization, but I mean, that's just one example, and there's a lot of
So I'm gonna smooth transition us from something you said earlier about being built for monetization versus like not. And I wanna talk about Overwatch 2. Because when Overwatch 2, so just to give our listeners here like a quick recap.
A history.
It was announced earlier this week that Blizzard was completely scrapping its PvE roadmap. So when Overwatch 2 was first announced, I mean, really, like, as a hardcore Overwatch 1 player, the major reason that made sense for Overwatch 2 was that an expansive PvE content, like, story campaign was going to be offered to players. So, like, finally, the fucking, all these cinematics that we've watched that got us super invested in these characters. Now we're finally going to get to play the story.
I wanted a TV show.
Yeah, transmedia, the fuck out of this shit, right? Like we finally,
none of it.
Yeah, we finally had the single player long form story content that we were going to get. We've all been asking for since 2016.
Blizzard always does great stories, usually.
You know?
Yeah.
And then we find out, just before launch or whatever, within the year before launch, that PvE was not going to be in the game at launch because they were still working on it. So game launches. It's really like Overwatch 1 reskin, except they take it down to 5 players instead of 6, get some new characters. As a reminder, too, this is part of my rant, we didn't get like Overwatch 1 content for like 2 fucking years, other than paid skins. But like,
they
new
just
characters,
took away stuff
new
and
maps.
Charged you mm-hmm. more.
Yeah, no new skin, no new characters, no new maps were introduced, no new modes were introduced because they were working on Overwatch 2. So all they did was continue to monetize Overwatch 1 with skins, but all that other content we were getting was gone. So then Overwatch 2 comes out, it doesn't have the single player content, and then we find out that they're changing the single player content. This was last year. And then I didn't even know this actually, but they released 2 single player campaigns as part of a battle pass for $15 that felt more like the free PvE experiences we had in Overwatch 1.
They
didn't
campaigns.
Sell well at all, which makes sense because if it was anything like what we got for free in Overwatch 1, it's pretty doggy doo doo. You're like, they're okay, you know, but not something I'd
like
ever pay for. Yeah, nothing that's worth buying. And then January comes along. They laid off that whole team, which I didn't know. And obviously, we all know they did layoffs, but so many companies that are doing layoffs. Like, how do you keep track of which teams are being laid off, honestly? But yeah, it turns out they laid off most of that team doing the PvE content, and now it's just being scrapped completely. So why the fuck does Overwatch 2 even exist?
It literally went from like, hey guys, hold on. We're going to get that. We're going to make this awesome game. But we're still working on it. So here's Overwatch 2. We're actually going to take away most of what was in Overwatch 1. But just wait. Okay, we waited, and then we played it, and we're like, okay. And they're like, just wait. Waited. Oh, actually, we're just canceling all of this because nothing sold.
I know. What a bait and switch, right? All of the features that people wanted were promised didn't happen. It should be a disaster because it was like, you were saying, it's literally a reskin.
Failure on just like, unprecedented
on so many
my
fronts.
Opinion.
Yeah,
my opinion from Blizzard.
Think about Overwatch League, guys.
Yeah,
Overwatch League
I
was the biggest
Owl.
Failure in esports history.
Yeah, I worked with Owl.
I mean, like, I followed Owl really closely.
Doesn't work for them. Or with them.
With London Spitfire, I was doing the PR in season one when they actually won season one championship. Was cool.
Cool.
But like, we knew back then, like, y'all are charging like $15 million a slot, and then it went to $30 million for season two, and they just weren't monetizing at all. Everybody knew it back then. I was like, this is doomed to fucking fail.
It was just the game. It was like, I was just like, Overwatch is not watchable. And that was the problem. Like, I sat there, like I said, I went to BlizzCon. I sat through tournaments, and I'm like, it's just not from the player perspective, I don't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. I could
you have
not
to play.
Tell.
You
even
have to play, like, you have to be like a more serious player.
But
to
like,
really
I was playing
everything.
At the time. I knew, and I'm like, okay, like, yeah, maybe Ryan used to like, and like, even like, and it was so. It's not like Counter-Strike. I feel like almost anyone can like sit there and kind of be like, okay, there's the terrorists and there's the
God tier esport.
I know, but Counter-Strike is very easy to understand, but it's very hard to master, even in viewing. But Overwatch, it just was like, and they tried so many things to make it a better viewing experience, and nothing just worked. Just the game just wasn't an all-star game that they were expecting.
Well, you knew it's season one
sad.
Finals. So League obviously has crazy numbers, but even the game that breaks the record for concurrent on Twitch or has multiple times is Counter-Strike. It has like 1 million plus concurrents for their for the finals of the majors, which happen twice a year. The Overwatch Season 1 finals peaked at like 300,000. I mean, that's just like a huge fucking drop. I mean, it was almost the same numbers for the grand finals as it was for opening weekend of OWL.
Wow.
So, I mean, it just didn't really see the growth. Like, you didn't see like just out like crazy numbers. So, like, where was the justification for the amount of money that Blizzard was demanding from teams to buy in? I can't even imagine what they were charging their sponsors year one. So, I mean, I did think they did some good stuff.
Yeah.
Like with like,
I'm just, they were just so certain it was going to succeed, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, Overwatch, in terms of like being able to monetize, Overwatch was built to be an esport. Like that game, like the long history of esports was that the community decided what games were popular were going to be esports, because that scene naturally grew from popularity. Like, even League, I would say, is the same. You know, yeah. Counter-Strike especially, you know, grassroots esports scene, like, for sure. And then once, like, League took off and Counter-Strike started taking off with esports, developers like, oh, how can we create a game that's going to be an esport? And I think Overwatch was one of the first ones from a major publisher that was actually created, I think, with that in mind.
Very intentionally, yeah.
You know, and, like, it was a it's a fun game to play competitively.
It is. Yeah.
Like losing always sucks, but
yeah,
it has the same like ups and downs of any ranked game, but it has a good system, you know, two tanks, two healers, two supports, or whatever the build is right now, the meta,
one tank now,
you know, oh yeah, because there's five, but you know, so I mean, the game is a fun game to play. It is super chaotic to understand watching, which is definitely a hurt, but yeah, man. Like
the fact that they're just outright saying like we're not doing any more PvE content makes me think they've actually given up. Like literally,
if this game costs money,
they already did
a fucking class action lawsuit. Like anybody who bought this game should get a refund, but it is free, yeah. So you can't. But
no,
like,
if
I spent $60,
yeah.
Overwatch 2 is free to play. So you're, I mean. But if I had spent like $70 on this game on the promise that PvE content was coming and I never came through, I would be like fucking flipping out. I would be demanding a refund in some way, shape, or form. Like it is like just straight up like failure.
It's just crazy that like now in my lifetime, I've seen Blizzard just fail two entire franchises, Overwatch and Heroes of the Storm. And like I enjoyed both of them, but like they've both like... They've peaked and gone back down like completely.
Yeah, it's really, you know, sad. It's funny too. Is like Blizzard got such a benefit of the doubt with I think both games personally. I do not think that Overwatch 1 when it launched was a 9 out of 10. That game like had a 9+ Metacritic. It was just getting crazy reviews. I don't think it was that game. I think maybe a year into launch it was that game, but I don't think at launch that it was a 9. And then you've seen Overwatch 2 come out. And I think, like, overall, it was, like, a 79 on Metacritic. But there were a lot of outlets giving it 9s, 9.5s, 10s.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Shea, Game Informer, got a ton of respect for him. I remember him, like, highly praising Overwatch 2 when it first came out. And he kind of walked it back after a couple months of saying, like, yeah, this game actually isn't progressing like I thought. But, yeah, like, I don't know how that game was getting reviewed so well.
I don't know.
It's like... It's really a great like next step for Overwatch. It's like it's literally the same fucking game. I mean, even the training mode is literally the same fucking training mode. Like it's an update. Like you want to talk about like Madden and FIFA just being reskins, which I disagree with. But like this is literally the same fucking game with
lesson
a big influx of content being dropped at once.
I wasn't able to access like. Yeah, characters and skins I had previously used. Like, I have no idea how something like that, like, got through. Like, Overwatch 2 was the stupidest thing in gaming, I think. Excuse me. That's happened in many, many years.
Yeah, I mean, but are we surprised? Blizzard has been, like, dropping the ball for like over a decade at this point. The only thing that's been holding them up is the fact that WoW still sells like gold bricks. You know, it's just like this gold brick printing machine in their office. Because if WoW, if they didn't have WoW, they would have been a failed company at this point. Because
it's the same like, with Niantic. If they didn't have Pokemon Go still raking in money, like what has Niantic done since?
Well, Niantic only does Pokemon Go.
Yeah, but that game is like
that's not true.
They have launched that's like not a bunch true. Of games since then. But none of them have taken off.
And before, but that game's like, I don't know, five years old at this point. WoW is like going on 15 or something 20. Crazy. 20 years old.
WoW
like,
is still a really solid game though right now.
I mean, yeah, but it's like...
That, it's saving the company.
It's their cash
it's
cow.
Literally it's the only thing cow. Keeping them of it, yeah. keeping
There's
them up.
There's actually
because,
an article on everything right now, or GameSpot, about how it still has 7.5 million subs right now. It's actually like higher than... It's the first time ever that they've drove that kind of subscription that hasn't been around an expansion launch.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's old reliable, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You can't.
But it's like, why do they even bother with other shit? Because like, Overwatch, I mean, Overwatch 1, I would say is a success, but it's probably their last one that they've had a long time. 2, obviously a flop. Diablo 4 didn't hit like they wanted it to. Had a lot of promise, didn't keep it up.
If you look at monetization, though, for failure. Diablo 4, I think that it would be considered a huge success. I think it sold a lot of copies at launch. It's like Pal World, okay? Who the fuck's talking about Pal World right now? But it sold a shit ton of copies at launch, so they made a lot of money. They're not monetizing it, like, live service, as they probably like they would have wanted to. But I think Diablo 4 is still definitely counted as a success.
That game had so much potential, and almost could have been a banger. The single player story I thought was honestly really good. Yeah. And they just dropped the ball after that. The end game content was just absolute trash. Blizzard, hire me. I'll fix your fucking games. But
I think it's really hard to make content for live service games, end game content like that, that is appealing and has enough depth to satisfy players as new content is made. Like, honestly, like WoW is the only one I can really think of personally that I've seen that like players actually stay engaged through a whole cycle and like raids are slowly coming out. But like a Destiny. Destiny's fucking boring after like 2 weeks. Like
it's because a lot of these companies use these cookie cutter templates that have been failing for many, many years at this point, and they expect it to work this time. It's like they just don't, they're just like, hey, this is how we've always done it. And
it's
that's
foundational.
Gonna work.
Like you have to have like a really good gameplay loop. And like I feel like they gamble on not having a good gameplay loop. Like Diablo 4's endgame was not a good gameplay loop. Like it just wasn't. And so like, WoW, like people say the game doesn't start until you hit the max level. You know what I mean? So like, there's just something about the way that they're thinking about these at like a very foundational level that is just not working out. And, you know, it's,
but
we needed to go back to the days where like people just like, I don't know, like trusted their gut and like actually listened to themselves like and designed games without group like a 20 person opinion pool.
We need to take big money out of games, but still fun.
I will say that people probably disagree with me on this because I actually think that this gives more depth, but like I personally hate the fucking Mythic system and Warcraft. I think it's boring to like go and do those dungeons and like a harder Mythic difficulty. But I would say people would disagree because you can get like end level content, like gear, like that's on par with like the raid, without having to do the raid. So it actually
the raids
more
are easier.
Content.
Yeah,
it actually gives you more content that way than like reducing it. But it reminds me more of like Destiny, where I'm just like doing like these fucking dungeons that you do when you're leveling sometimes, you know, and it's just like that's the content that keeps hitting. So, I don't know. I'm someone that gears towards the raid and like likes doing that. And I think it's because you go in there with such big groups too.
I'm gonna cut it off here. We're pretty close to the end, and this is something that I could tell Tyler is about to go on a tangent on. So
true.
I'm gonna go and cut it off. And we do have a couple of questions written in, so we're gonna go ahead and hit that. But if you would like to ask us a question or leave a comment, you can go to pixelatedrealms.org/ask and be part of the show. You can leave us a comment, and we'll talk about it at the end of the show, just like now. So Ralph wrote in a couple of questions again, just And so we're going to go ahead and talk about these. Rapid so this one fire. Says specifically for Dustin. We all know Dustin's love for female characters in video games. What was your first video game character you had a crush on?
Oh my God.
Ralph says his was Nina from Tekken Tag. I gotta look Nina. Up.
I have to see the first video game character Nina I can remember awesome. Crushing on would be Chun-Li from Street Fighter.
Wow.
Chun-Li.
Yeah, old even though I'm not a fighting right games guy, but like, I mean, who didn't grow up with a soft spot for Chun-Li in their heart?
Those thick legs.
Maybe it like influenced my whole life because I married an Asian woman. Yeah, who knows? That was the beginning of it for me. But yeah, Chun-Li, I would say.
That's hilarious. We'll have to get you a statue or something.
Trust me.
All right. And the next question is, I believe all of you are married or soon to be married. Congrats, Tyler. And some Thank of you, you have children. How do you balance your time between playing video games and other responsibilities in your life, such as family and spouse? That's a good you question. Don't. And
yeah, the answer don't. Is I don't.
Yeah. You don't. There's no balance. You steal away time anywhere yeah. you can.
Sacrifices I text Alex must be
and I'm
made.
Like, do you want a game? And then he says, sure, I'll be on at 9:30. I'm like, honey, I'm fucking gaming tonight. Is that okay? And then she decides.
Command whether not, question.
Whether or not it's okay.
Yeah, I try, you know, steal as much time. When I'm supposed to be doing chores when Naomi's asleep at night, am I doing chores? No. I'm playing games. Or you know, maybe I'll like during lunch, my lunch break at work or something. It's really hard. You definitely like lose a lot of your time. That's what Tyler was saying. Like, we're transitioning to being able to play like 5, 6, 7 hours a day to like 2 if you're lucky.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I usually like try to just get a couple like an hour or two in at you know after dinner or on the weekends. I can usually do like a little bit of a longer session, but. That's because I currently don't have any children. I assume that'll change one day. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, good question.
Get on it, bro.
Yeah.
Got to negotiate with your spouse, your partner. You got to negotiate for time. Be like, hey, can you take them to the park or to grandma's house? And I'm going to stay home and play games. And then tomorrow, I'll watch them all day.
Yeah.
You got to negotiate.
Too funny.
Yep. Let's see. I think that's it. Cool. Right. So that was a good episode. So thank you everyone for listening. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to be notified when we post new episodes. We post new episodes every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on podcast services and YouTube. You can also find us on Instagram, Threads, and YouTube at Pixelated Realms Podcast. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.